You're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Good morning. It's Tuesday, April 20th. I'm Roz Brown. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio.
It was the first initiative to allow adults to use cannabis. And now there are 17 states, Guam, and the District of Columbia, all now legal.
Our new meters are pay by plate, which means that it is incumbent upon the end user to know their license plate going forward.
Something is said by someone who purports to be left-wing doesn't make it true.
And those are some of the voices you'll hear coming up on the magazine today. It's 420, an international holiday celebrating all things cannabis. We'll check in with longtime cannabis reporter Leland Rucker for an update on marijuana news. By the end of this month, the city of Boulder is scheduled to install more than 100 new parking meters, or precisely, parking pay stations. More coming up. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have our weekly comment line, comments from you, our listeners, who have shared their thoughts on KGNU's programming. At 8:35, our producers for How on Earth are taking a break this week, so instead, we'll hear from Got Science, a podcast produced by concerned scientists. At 9 a.m., it's the wit and wisdom of Alan Watts, the British philosopher, writer, and speaker known for interpreting Eastern religious ideas for a Western audience. Then at 9:30 this morning, the Morning Sound Alternative, 2.5 hours of music comes your way with Terry Reardon. He'll be spinning the tunes for you this morning. But first today, we're going to take a look at the local and regional headlines. The sun has returned this morning after a strong cold front raced through overnight with several inches of snow. Around 39 degrees today is all we're going to get, but cold tonight with 15 degrees and then a 50% chance of more snow tomorrow. And we have to remember, April is the coolest month, and it's proving it this third week. But a warm-up with temperatures gradually getting above seasonal norms by the weekend. We'll have the full forecast for you at the end of headlines. A month after the mass shooting at Boulder's King Soopers, the Colorado governor on Monday signed two gun bills, one addressing lost or stolen guns and another aimed at proper storage of guns. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
The two laws that Governor Jared Polis signed are to address unintentional child shootings, firearm suicide, and making sure that law enforcement can solve and reduce gun crime. The Denver Post reports that Colorado State Bill HB 21-1106 requires people to secure their firearms when they're not in use or face a Class II misdemeanor charge. The second bill, SB 21-078, mandates that lost or stolen firearms be reported to authorities within 5 days. Law enforcement then provides that information to the National Crime Information Database. Eileen McCarron, president of the Gun Control Advocacy Group, Colorado Ceasefire, said that between 2015 and 2019, 437 Colorado youth and young adults died by suicide, with the majority of guns used coming from within the home. McCarron said that SB 21-078 is also called the Isabella Joy Thalas Act. Isabella Thalas was murdered near Coors Field last June with an assault weapon that had been stolen from a Denver police officer and never reported as stolen. McCarron added that over one half of reported stolen guns in Denver in 2020 were from vehicles. No Republicans in the General Assembly supported either bill, saying they infringe on gun owners' rights and criminalize gun owners. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
Meanwhile, tonight, Boulder City Council will vote on a resolution that calls on Boulder's state and federal representatives to pass legislation that could prevent mass shootings. Namely, that means advocating for an assault weapons ban. In addition to supporting all legislation that could prevent mass shootings, the resolution from the Boulder City Council will outline a number of other pieces of the regulations that city could support, including a short-barreled firearms equipped with pistols braces regulation, a waiting period of at least 6 days for firearm purchases, and the addition of a 10-year firearm prohibition for individuals with convictions, including other regulations. Had Boulder's previously passed assault weapon ban not been struck down by the courts and remained enforceable, it would not likely have prevented the King Super shooting because the gunman lived elsewhere and purchased the gun in another jurisdiction. Today is 420, for many years now the unofficial holiday for marijuana consumers, until legalized in Colorado, a time for gatherings across the state that attracted thousands of marijuana users to protest in civil disobedience by gathering in public to smoke at 420 p.m. Well, this year, the Colorado Department of Transportation and Mothers Against Drunk Driving have teamed up to plead with Coloradans to not get behind the wheel of their car today. And that's because in 2020, Colorado State Patrol says officers arrested 90% more drivers who were impaired by a combination of marijuana and alcohol compared to the year prior. CDOT and MAD said there was an 18% jump from 2019 to 2020 of people killed by a suspected impaired driver in Colorado. And we'll have more on 420 and its history coming up in today's magazine. A clinic providing the COVID-19 vaccine in Colorado Springs has been reported as operating without proper temperature storage for vaccines or social distancing, as well as unmasked workers. According to the Associated Press, the violations occurred at the El Paso County Clinic, Dr. MoMA Health Wellness. The AP reports that the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment stopped vaccinations at the clinic after nearly 4,000 people got one or more dose of Pfizer or Moderna there. The El Paso public health employee visited the clinic on April 9th after receiving phone calls and emails with concerns and complaints about the clinic and the vaccines that were being administered there. Food experts are looking to turn innovative production and distribution strategies deployed during the coronavirus pandemic into policy in order to make Colorado's food system more equitable and resilient, and to expand the capacity for local producers to get nutrient-rich foods to people regardless of their income level and where they live. Eric Galatis with Public News Service has more.
After the coronavirus pandemic shut down restaurants and emptied grocery shelves, food experts say lessons learned while rebuilding regional supply chains could be tapped to make Colorado's food system more resilient and equitable. Wendy Peters-Muschetti with the group Nourish Colorado says when restaurants stopped placing orders and the number of people needing emergency food assistance spiked, many local producers knew just how to shift gears.
An incredible amount of creativity and say, how do I still feed my community? Donating or selling to food pantries, working with SNAP recipients or WIC families. We saw those sort of connections come together to a great degree, which to me is incredible resiliency.
As thousands of Coloradans lost jobs during the pandemic's economic fallout, the number of families not knowing where their next meal would come from rose from 9% before the pandemic to nearly 40% by last December. Muschetti says the state's food crisis is far from over. I'm Eric Galatis.
The Palisade Peach Festival will return this August after being canceled last year due to the coronavirus pandemic. The 53rd annual Palisade Peach Festival is now scheduled for August 19th through the 21st, which typically brings some 15,000 people to Palisade. But there's a possible catch. With the Arctic front moving through Colorado, workers at peach orchards in Palisade are working to protect the fruit, given that last year, a deep freeze just about this time destroyed up to 95% of Palisade's peaches. Weather along the Front Range today, mostly sunny, a high around 40 degrees, low tonight of only 15. Tomorrow, 37 degrees, but again, a 50% chance of some snow showers returning, then 50 degrees by Thursday, 55 on Friday, and hang on, a chance of rain showers on Friday, but then 72 degrees by Sunday. You're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. It's 8:14. A decade ago, legalization was the battle cry of 420 gatherings around the country, including the internationally famed marijuana gatherings each year at CU Boulder. But now, Colorado has almost a decade of recreational marijuana legalization under its belt. Writing for the Boulder Weekly, that is, Sensi Magazine, and the now NewsStation.com, Leland Rucker has covered the cannabis industry and marijuana culture since Amendment 64 legalized recreational adult use in Colorado, and that was way back in 2012. KGNU's Hanalei Myers checked back in with Rucker for an update on the world of cannabis.
Well, Leland, it is fabulous to have you back on the KGNU airwaves speaking about cannabis news once again. And what better day to have you on than on 420? So thank you for joining us this morning.
Yeah.
Let's begin by looking at some of the biggest changes in cannabis since the passage of Amendment 64, since the passage of medical marijuana in the state. There's been so much that have been going on with cannabis in general in the United States overall since you started covering this. So what are some of the biggest changes that stand out to you? And where does Colorado fit in the national cannabis marijuana scene at this point?
Obviously, the biggest change since Amendment 64 was passed in 2012 was that it was the first initiative to allow adults to use cannabis. And now there are 17 states, Guam and the District of Columbia, all now legal. New Mexico, which is the second state to adjoin Colorado, just legalized. Oklahoma, which abuts us down there on the southeast corner, they have a robust medical program, even though it's a Republican-run state. New York, Virginia, the first southern state, and the latest ones are all added by legislatures, not by initiatives. And that's a signal that finally legislatures are catching on to their constituents. And I think that's got to be the most important big change, is that we were the first ones to do it. It was completely illegal, and now it's legal in 17 states and two territories.
So the mood has changed, not so taboo as it once was.
Well, you know, here in Colorado, you know, when Amendment 64 was passed, there was almost complete opposition in the legislature, especially on the Republican side. And now Republicans are the ones that are bringing up bills.
So there's been a lot of focus on how much the state has benefited financially from marijuana legalization. Can you fill us in there? What kind of benefits financially has the state seen?
Sales are now at an all-time high. I think more than $2 billion of marijuana was sold last year, 509 dispensaries. The state brought in $387,000 in taxes and fees just in 2020. And I think that's important for people to remember. I can remember just a couple of years ago going to a conference where somebody sniffed at the number $250,000 in state revenues, because it wasn't solving Colorado's problems. But nobody ever thought that it would solve their problems. And, you know, $387,000 last year, that's nothing to sniff at. Even though it's only 2% of the budget, it's still a lot of money.
So in terms of marijuana policy, where is the focus now?
Well, the main one, I think, would be the emphasis on social equity. That wasn't a big concern in 2012 when we originally passed this. Now it's part of any bill that any state passes. There are social equity concerns to deal with. And now we have laws here in Colorado to deal with social equity. One is a definition of for future licensing programs, and to qualify, applicants have to prove that they or their families were negatively impacted by the war on drugs, or that they earn less than 50% of the state median income. That's just starting to come into effect, and so we'll have to see how that works. The other thing is the expungement of criminal records for something that's now legal. And but that's as the state is finding out, that's an expensive process that still needs to be fine-tuned and simplified somewhat.
And anything you see on the horizon here in Colorado as a focus for the industry?
One thing about the pandemic is that there have been attempts to add places where people could consume socially ever since Amendment 64 was passed. And we were almost at a point last year in 2020 where they were going to start allowing that. And then the pandemic hit. And I don't know, you know, this is not going to be pushing social consumption, but as people begin to gather again, I guess we'll find out.
So here we are, 420 in Colorado, many years of legalization under the state's belt. And I'm sure as a cannabis reporter, you still encounter misunderstandings.
You know, here we are in 2021, and the governor of Nebraska, Mr. Ricketts, said that if Nebraska legalizes cannabis, it will kill your children. Now, this isn't true. It isn't even remotely true. But we still have that going on in 2021. So, you know, as far as we've come in legalization, you know, about a third of the country now, we still got a lot of work to do.
Again, that was Leland Rucker, longtime cannabis correspondent and editor at thenewsstation.com, bringing us an update on cannabis news for 420. Well, it is 20 degrees outside our Boulder studios right now. Roads are snowpacked, so plan a few extra minutes if you're headed out. You know that little annoying slip of paper that must be walked back to your car and placed on your dashboard after you pay for parking in downtown Boulder? Well, it's going the way of the dinosaur. Something new and hopefully better is being introduced this spring.
They take credit cards, they take cash, they take coin, and they also take parking tokens.
That's Eric Davis, Asset and Operations Manager for the City of Boulder, who says by the end of this month, the City of Boulder will have installed 134 new parking pay stations.
So our previous pay stations were pay and display, which means that you got out of your car, you went to the nearest pay station, you selected your number of time, you paid your cash, and you were given a printed receipt, which you would have to display in your windshield for the parking enforcement staff to look at and see if you paid. Our new meters are pay by plate, which means that it is incumbent upon the end user to know their license plate going forward. So that's the major thing that's different. So you'll have to know your license plate. So when you get to the kiosk, you select the amount of time, you type in your license plate, and that's it. You hit pay, and then you're done. Your plate gets stored in the database. And so when the parking enforcement drives by with our LPR equipped vehicles, which stands for license plate recognition, they have little cameras on top of the vehicles which see the plates, and it reads those plates against the database of paid vehicles. So if you paid, your vehicle will just show up already as paid and you don't have to do anything else. So this is great twofold. Not only does it save a trip for the consumer from having to go to the kiosk back to their vehicle, but it also saves us on having to have printed receipts, which really contributes to the city's green goals, as well as one less maintenance cost, because those paper tickets used to jam a lot, and we'd have to repair them. So that's personnel cost as well as parts cost. So it is a cost-saving feature as well. But if you need a receipt, you still have the ability to get one texted to your phone. Or if you forget to do that, you could email us, and we're able to pull it off from the back-end servers and email you a copy of your receipt for your expense reports or whatever else you may need record of parking for.
Parking meters have been around for 85 years. The first, known as Parkometer No. 1, installed in Oklahoma City on July 16, 1935. For decades, you could only use coins to pay for parking until credit cards became the payment of choice. Davis says a new pay-by-license plate system should be easier not only for residents, but also tourists visiting the city.
The previous pay stations, the MP104s, they didn't have a colored touchscreen. That's the biggest difference is this now is a new colored touchscreen, which allows us to do a lot of things like support multiple languages. The new machines can support Mandarin, Spanish, German, etc. So for visitors coming into the downtown core who might not be English speakers, they have the ability to still see what's going on the kiosk. But it also allows us to present more information to the end user, easily changeable. The old dot matrix displays was really limited and could be kind of confusing. There was a lot of complaints and the parts would go wrong.
The city had originally planned to replace 175 parking stations, but was forced to scale back the number to 134 due to budget cuts brought on by the coronavirus pandemic. Davis says the new technology will cost more than $1 million, but is expected to save money in the long run.
What was happening was the old meters were reaching the end of their lifetime, and the maintenance cost on those was continuing to rise. So this is actually going to be a cost savings if you project out the maintenance costs on the old meters and project out the costs on the new meters. It'll end up being a cost savings because they're much more simplistic. There's a lot more that we could do software-wise remotely as opposed to having to go to the machines and programming them directly at the machine. So it gives us a lot of flexibility to do things, especially for, let's say we have a special event downtown. We could program in special rates remotely or offer special codes that could be put in for validation. They also support the Downtown Boulder Partnership gift cards. So if you're, you know, giving the downtown gift card or your downtown business and you reward your employees in gift cards, those can be used on our pay stations. We made sure they have that capability. But we made sure to keep coins. A lot of these pay stations in other cities don't have coin acceptance. With the coin shortage and the pandemic, a lot of people don't want to touch coins. But prior to the pandemic is when this bid went out. And we really wanted to keep coins for an equity reason across the city. So we have these new touchscreens, but you still have the ability to pay with coinage, which I think for the residents of Boulder is an important thing, because there's been a lot of feedback from the public for wanting us to keep coins.
Davis says the plan was to have all the parking stations installed by early May, but the contractor is actually running ahead of schedule.
On Friday, we had 112 machines installed with 22 remaining, and completion is on track for the May 3rd deadline, but they're hoping to finish in April, the last week of April.
Again, that was Eric Davis with the City of Boulder. He says there will be a learning curve on how to use a new parking pay station, especially if you're not familiar with, say, like a smartphone or other new technology. But there is a tutorial on the city site, bouldercolorado.gov. Go to Access and Parking Services and scroll down to New Parking Pay Stations. And now, because it's Tuesday, it's time for KGNU's Comment Line, when we hear what's on the mind of listeners.
Hello, I'm calling. There was a program on the Middle East, Syria, on Hemispheres. Aaron Mate was talking, and I thought it was really a bad conversation. His view of Syria was, I think, very warped, and he's a part of this gray zone, which is very dubious. I thought the whole talk was very biased, and I just don't appreciate that kind of a broadcast. So I'm a community member, been donating for many, many years to KGNU, and my name is Frank Reck.
Hello, I would like to comment about a Hemisphere program featuring Aaron Mate. This was a very poor program that was propagating disinformation about an extremely serious topic, i.e. chemical warfare and the OPCW. Why is KGNU supporting Putin's cover-up of chemical warfare and bringing on air someone from the gray zone, which is a known propaganda disinformation site or organization? This kind of thing makes me want to rethink why I even want to be a member of KGNU, because I have a strong regard for truth. Truth and propaganda are different. Truth and lies are different. Truth and cover-ups are not the same thing. And just because something is said by someone who purports to be left-wing doesn't make it true. There are plenty of experts in the local area. You could have them speak on Hemispheres and give the real information. There's Dr. Nada Hashemi, who is known to KGNU and a friend of David Barsamian. He could give the real information about the OPCW, the chemical attacks, the white helmets. He is an expert on the Middle East. He has the Middle East Center at Denver University. You could talk to Charles Lister of the Middle East Center. You could even try talking to an actual Syrian whose actual family were in fact killed in Ghouta by Assad's forces, someone like Obed Kaifo at the Shish Kebab Grill in Denver, and he's a member of the Syrian American Council. So he also has a lot of real expert information. There's lots of people who could give you a chance to do some balanced journalism by presenting facts. Thank you. This is Olivia Hudis.
Hi, James Kenworthy. I just finished listening to Hemispheres. Joe Ritchie was talking to somebody in South America, one informed intelligent guy talking to another informed intelligent guy in another country, and we're getting the lowdown on what life is like there. KGNU needs more programs like that. It's worth listening to. Thanks a lot.
And thanks for tuning in this morning to KGNU's Morning Magazine. A reminder that we'd like to share a comment with KGNU. You can call us at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25. Again, that's 303-447-9911 if you'd like to comment on KGNU's programming.